We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello, welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website read by Corrie Caulfield.
Olympic gold medalist Jessica Ennis-Hill is poised to return to action for the first time since giving birth to her son at an event in Manchester.
And our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Hugo Rifkin. And opposite them on my left, children's author and comedian BJ Novak and Fred McCauley. Jeremy, who ruled out a rise by surprise?
Cameron. OK, well, Miliband thought he'd be quite smart because last time the Tories promised they wouldn't raise VAT and then they did. And rather than just say, don't trust the Tories, and these are the things that they promised they'd do and they didn't do, he thought he'd get him in a corner. PMQs, he said, I want a straight answer to a straight question. Will you rule out a rise in VAT? And then Cameron said, yes. And he went, What, really? Because that's kind of ruined everything.
Yeah, but they're all saying now, aren't they, that nobody's going to raise any money whatsoever. There's no, there'll be no national insurance rises, no VAT, nothing.
Yeah, you know? But that's not really what they're for anymore, you know, raising money and running the country. They're just this sort of comical sideshow we have.
Ah.
I don't think we actually expect them to do things that are going to make the country better.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
Yeah. No, it doesn't work like that at all anymore.
So, Peter, you've arrived at an exciting time in British politics.
We're
we're discussing whether or not VAT is going to rise.
Yeah.
As exciting as it gets, frankly.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Do you even know who Ed Miliband is? Has he made a kind of big splash in the United States?
You talk to me now.
I know who he is, but I imagine Fred would have more opinions.
No.
No?
Ed Miliband didn't actually deny that he would raise national insurance contributions. And Cameron got flustered and he actually said, straight answers deserve straight questions. He got it round the wrong way.
Yeah.
Which made me think that PMQs should be renamed. It should be PMAs.
Well, David Cameron said of Ed Miliband, in 43 days' time, I plan to arrange his retirement, Mr. Speaker. And you think he's going to be busy, isn't it? That's general election day. So I see the... I mean, it's sweet of him, I think, you know.
What's weird is I don't think it's occurred to Ed Miliband that he might actually be Prime Minister. Because all he talks about is what Cameron is going to do. And I think, well, you're taking quite a lot for granted. It might actually be you, Ed. You never know.
I felt sorry for Ed Balls because I think Labour had just spent quite a lot of money on a poster attacking the Conservatives for taking up VAT. And then last week he paid £5 for a One Direction poster, so I think he must be feeling... A bit foolish. Bonus point, how did Mr Cameron let slip his 2020 vision this week?
He said he won't do a third term. Because he's obviously trying to seem wise. Because he hasn't been properly elected this time. Whoever gets elected this time coming is not going to, you know, it's going to be another cobbled together. He's not going to be covered in glory. And he's probably kind of thinking, oh, I will have had enough. But the way it was talked about was though he didn't want to go down the Thatcher and Blair route.
Of actually going mad.
Well, the thing is...
I did think the Cameron thing was extraordinary, though, because I say if you haven't won one election, ruling out winning three is a little bit presumptuous. Mm. But what I liked, they talked a lot about, after the interview, senior Tories quickly mobilised to defend Cameron's comment. And I cannot say senior Tories without thinking of a Spanish man called Tories. Senior Tories, the Prime Minister, he needs your help. I think it's the most fantastic name for somebody. Again, not that interesting to you, BJ, I'm going to guess.
Most Americans think the Prime Minister of Great Britain is Hugh Grant. So I'm playing catch-up with this whole conversation.
Well, your presidents are only allowed to do two terms, aren't they?
Yeah, and they announced that prior to the election as well. So we have that in common, I guess.
But the big thing for us has been that there have been lots of interviews in kitchens. This has been the big thing. We've had Ed Miliband, the opposition leader, in his kitchen. We've had David Cameron in the kitchen. Do they do that? Are there a lot of politicians in their kitchens? Is that a big thing?
I think wherever Oprah wants to do the interview is probably where anyone will be happy to do one.
I sort of have an image Americans eat out more. Maybe you do them in diners rather than...
Yeah, you do see that, especially in the Iowa primaries, eating foods that these very thin politicians would never normally eat.
Grits.
Sure, grits and corn dogs is a big one.
No. Don't they have to go around each ethnic group eating that food and being photographed?
Yeah. It sounds sort of like a strange sexual or social tradition when you phrase it that way, but it is over the course of a long election period, yeah.
Good. Do you think they'll come up and do an interview with Mr. Salmon in his kitchen? Oh, you do deep fry them.
David Cameron wrong-footed Ed Miliband at PMQs by saying yes when asked if he would rule out a rise in VAT if the Tories won the election. George Osborne had refused to rule out a VAT rise 5 times on Wednesday, apparently in order to trick Mr. Miliband into leading on the issue at PMQs. It marks 10 years since the last straight answer in the House of Commons when Gordon Brown muttered Jesus and Tony Blair replied yes. Earlier this week, Prime Minister David Cameron ruled out serving for a third term and was accused of arrogance by the opposition. By giving the interview in his kitchen, Cameron tried to show that he was just like the general public, spending his time putting away the shopping, making lunch and discussing why David Cameron shouldn't be Prime Minister. The Prime Minister defended his comments at an Age UK event where he faced a barrage of heckles from the pensioner audience. One woman shouted, "You're not answering the question," while another yelled, "Rubbish," and a third said, "I'm 98, you know." 2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, whose plan to unplug the speaker got bad feedback?
This was the big political drama. This is William Hague, who, along with firm friend of this programme, Michael Gove, hatched a plan this week to unseat the Speaker, John Bercow. And John Bercow, who, because he's very small and sits in the middle, some people regard as Parliament's answer to Sandy Toksvig. The idea, anyway, was that they were going to pass a law whereby people who had official roles in the House of Commons get elected by a secret ballot rather than just by everybody shouting yay or no, which is, it has sort of pros and cons as an idea, but they did it kind of quite surreptitiously. They did it by bringing forward this motion at the very last minute in the hope that most of Labour, because they quite like Bercow, wouldn't be there anymore on account of it being sort of Wednesday evening when the weekend starts. And so anyway, they had the debate and Bercow managed to delay it because he let the Labour Party do some extra emergency motions, which held it back a few hours, which meant lots of people could get there. And so it meant that the government was defeated despite the frantic whipping of Michael Gove, which is a nice sentence.
It was a weird do, that, because one of the things they hate about Bercow is that he does actually champion the backbenchers and he's always on Cameron's case because Cameron is always asking Miliband questions, which you're not supposed to do at Parliament. You're just supposed to be, you know, it's like when you're being interrogated the police. You're not supposed to say, "Do you really think those shoes go with those trousers?" You're not supposed to do that. And that's why one of the reasons they hate him. He's always upbraiding Cameron for that.
Do you remember when his wife, Sally Bercow, she did that photo shoot with the Parliament in the background and she was just wearing a sheet? One of my colleagues at the time suggested that maybe John Bercow was under the sheet too, but you just couldn't see.
PJ, if you don't know who John and Sally Bercow are, they're kind of like the Beyoncé and Jay-Z of Britain. Wow. But anyway, it was a wonderfully emotional speech, wasn't it, from David... Was it Charles Walker gave a
yes,
wonderfully emotional speech?
It was, because basically he'd headed up the committee that had advised that this ought to happen, because it's not a bad idea that when they have a vote on something that affects them, they should do it by a secret ballot rather than, you know, having to say, no, I don't want the guy who'll be standing there letting me speak for the next 5 years. So it's a fairly sensible idea, but he'd headed up the committee and he was upset because he'd seen Hague the day before or 2 days before, and even he hadn't been told that they were actually going to move to do it, because they did it just in a really surreptitious manner. They did it because they thought nobody would be there and they thought they'd sneak it through.
Because it was supposed to be a nice, relaxing last day for the MPs, and then this happened. Honestly, do you not think William Hague is like the child that begs for a mock exam on the last day of school?
Didn't Bercow get emotional as well?
Yes, he did, yeah.
So everybody was emotional.
Oh, darling, it was like, honestly, there was shouting, crying, dramatic pauses. It was like something out of Downton Abbey, but with more posh people. Speaker of the House, John Bercow, has survived an attempt by Tory MPs led by William Hague to change the system by which the Speaker of the House is elected. Many Conservative MPs called this the payback plot, which is, coincidentally, the name of the gardening show the BBC are going to replace Top Gear with. Personally, I can't get enough of that story. Many papers handled the story differently. The Daily Telegraph said that the government had been routed. The Guardian said that John Bercow had been vindicated, while the Evening Standard ran those raunchy pictures of Sally Bercow again, because that was the most helpful thing they could think of. One MP said that Bercow had liberated backbenchers. Yeah, forget Martin Luther King. In Britain, we have the first man who dares to liberate privileged white men. So, well done. 2 points to Hugo. BJ, who might have had a hunch he'd be such a spectacle in 2015?
Perhaps this is Richard III?
Yes.
And perhaps he wasn't the best guy ever?
Ooh.
Maybe.
Ooh.
Too soon. Too soon.
No, I'm I'm going to look forward to seeing what you think about pronouncing the word Leicester.
I was waiting for you to do it. Okay. I was a big Shakespeare student, so I know him as the fictional character more than an actual monarch, and sort of a very colorful figure of evil and treachery and leadership. So a very American way to be found under a car park.
Oh, it's...
I mean, this is where you bury a thug.
Yeah.
This is... And again, a fictional character that someone would know overseas from a Shakespeare play. It's really stunning to even think that this person is real, let alone someone that you dig up under a parking lot.
Oh, they found Anne of Green Gables as well. Yeah.
No, it's got everything the British love, darling. It's got royals queuing, Shakespeare characters, car
Death.
Parks, moving
yeah.
skeletons
Fantastic.
Around the Midlands, everything.
I have a tradition to propose. If you had fun today, every winter you can dig up Richard III, and if he sees his shadow, you have 6 more weeks of the winter of our discontent.
I love this. What I loved, they went through the list of people who fought at the Battle of Bosworth, included Marmaduke Constable, Samuel Spriggs, and Sir Reginald Bray. I love the fact that everybody in the 15th century sounded like a racehorse. I think it's...
But they're only like 95% sure it's actually him. And you think of the fuss they've made this week. If they find him again...
What if he turns up and he's fine?
It was a level of fervour for a royal funeral. You thought at least Elton John would be singing. Richard III became a top attraction this week, with tens of thousands flocking to Leicester to pay their respects to what is believed to be the last Plantagenet's remains found under a car park in the city in 2012. Some in Leicester felt he was paraded around in the manner of an FA Cup trophy, but many people commented, how would the people of Leicester know what that was like? Leicester has really made the most of the find, using it as a marketing tool for the city with a new city motto, Leicester, we found a skeleton in a car park once. Replacing the previous slogan, Leicester, at least it's not Derby. 2 points to BJ. Fred, who's being made to look like a proper Charlie?
This is the Prince of Wales, isn't it?
Mm.
The Supreme Court have announced that we might be able to read his letters, which I'm pleased to say I've actually got hold of. Would you like to hear
yes,
some
please,
of them?
Darling. Yeah. Yes, that'd be marvellous.
Here's the first one.
What's the second one?
he wrote to the Department of Work and Pensions, asked if they could explain to him what those two words meant. He wrote to Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, or as he knows it, his mum's Revenue and Customs, asking for an advance on his 2004 allowance because he wanted to get the New England football team away strip. He wrote to the Foreign Office asking why he'd had a row for saying the word frog when he'd heard his father using far worse. And he was talking about his tadpoles. He wrote to the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs to see if they would like to buy some grouse-flavoured Dutchie shortbread. And he wrote to the Department of Health because he's been feeling a bit chesty. Busy man!
Apparently he gets frustrated because some government ministers don't reply to his letters. And I know the feeling. I am still waiting for Zayn Malik to respond.
Constitutionally, has he got any role in terms of politicians? I mean, isn't he just supposed to wait until he's king, if that ever happens?
Well, I think that the whole point is that we need to find out whether he is politically impartial, because it could have serious implications when he becomes monarch in 30 years or so. But it's probably going to be... Don't you think it's going to be those awful, rambling old men letters that you get to the editor in The Telegraph, who, dear sir, last week I was dismayed to hear a young person listen to popular beat music called drum and bass. What will happen to tunes you can whistle? It'll be that kind of...
Are very, very passionate about the environment, most of which he owns, obviously.
What is the American obsession with the royal family, BJ? I don't understand it.
I think this country is relatively obsessed with the royals as well. I hear much more about them over here than I do over there. And I think that it's very glamorous and exciting to have a cast of characters that you feel you know and can talk about and gossip about. And it's the closest thing we have in America is yours.
You have also have had a head of state who is the idiot spawn of a previous head of state. So we're not entirely...
The Supreme Court has ruled that secret letters written by Prince Charles to British government ministers can be published, overruling the Attorney General's decision in 2012 not to allow them to be released. The letters are said to contain Charles's most deeply held views and beliefs and could damage his position of political neutrality. David Cameron said he's considering how the letters will be released, but as they're written by a royal, they will most likely be printed on commemorative tea towels. At the end of round one, the scores are BJ and Fred have got 4 points, but Jeremy and Hugo are in the lead with 5. With a clipping from the North Wales Daily Post.
Please note that British summertime ends on the last Sunday in October, which this year will fall on March the 25th.
Thanks to everyone who sent us that. Hugo, have a listen to this. Hugo, whose departure this week was the most shocking?
Well, there's a lot to choose from, but I think we probably have to start, with Jeremy Clarkson, because what happened with Jeremy Clarkson is, for the last few weeks, he's been starring in this new BBC reality television programme called Will the BBC Sack Jeremy Clarkson? And this week, the BBC sacked him from it, even though he won the public vote. There you go. He was sacked from Top Gear for the minor crime of punching a producer so hard in the face he had to go to hospital. And clearly many people are upset by this, and a lot of them signed that petition. I think 1 million people signed the petition about how badly they've been let down. And I think, they have been let down, and I feel very strongly that Clarkson should make it up to them all, this 1 million people, by going to find each one of them personally and punching them in the face.
But see, to me, that's not the most shocking departure of them.
Oh, well, you could be talking about Lee Kuan Yew, who sort of left Singapore by dying.
Yes.
The founder of Singapore, maybe. Yeah. Or you could be talking about Zayn from One Direction.
Yeah. I've only just worked out who he is. I finally am up to speed with current affairs and pop music, and he's leaving.
How many people are there in One Direction?
I have no idea.
Hundreds.
Well, with most boy bands, it's 5, isn't it?
Yeah,
is it?
I think,
that's 4 more than they need, isn't it?
No, but these bands, they never survive when somebody... Look what happened to the Beatles after Pete Best left. Do you know what I'm saying?
I thought for a long time that One Direction were called Wand Erection. And I wondered why it was okay to say that on the radio.
That's magic. I know the name of another member of One Direction, and it's Harry Styles.
Wow.
And I want to open a ceramics shop called Harry's Tiles.
But we have to sympathise with emotional teenagers. I do. I think it'd be like David Cameron suddenly quitting the cabinet, right? And George Osborne would have to take over as the hot one. Do you know what I mean? It's just you have to have some sympathy.
Are they teenagers then?
Who?
One Direction.
I think he's 22.
Aww, bigger than your thumb.
Imagine retiring at 22, though.
I know, how lovely.
Imagine when retiring at 62. 68.
When Robbie Williams left Take That in 1995, a helpline was set up to support devastated fans.
I remember when Michael Jackson split up, I was gutted.
When Jason Orange quit to Take That last year, a similar service was set up to help explain which one he was. Yes, it's been a terrible week for idolised sex gods as both Zayn Malik and Jeremy Clarkson left their respective positions. Jeremy Clarkson has been fired from Top Gear following an inquiry into a fracas with a producer. He's been fired in the traditional Top Gear way, out of a cannon inside a Mini into a caravan. The producer's injuries were so bad he had to drive himself to A&E, which he still thought was safer than asking someone from the programme. Meanwhile, Zayn Malik has left One Direction, so if you're wondering why your teenage daughter has been moping around the house lately, sobbing into a pillow, it's not because Richard III is dead. I just want to be a normal 22-year-old, said the multimillionaire, surrounded by his three bodyguards and public relations officer before flying by helicopter back to his Hertfordshire mansion. One Direction were discovered during X Factor Series 7, where they lost to Matt Cardle and Rebecca Ferguson. Matt and Rebecca are still delighting crowds at Asda checkouts everywhere. At 2 points to Hugo. Oh, and the Singapore guy as well. That's bad. Lee Kuan Yew, first Prime Minister of Singapore, also died this week. Not funny. Mr. Lee was one of the most influential politicians in East Asia and is widely considered the founding father of modern Singapore. Singapore's leader was criticised by some as having old-fashioned views, leaning towards the right politically, and wasn't afraid to show his strength, which would have made him the ideal host for Top Gear. And 2 points to Hugo. BJ,
yeah.
Who wants cruise control in Washington?
So the wing of the religious conservative Republican movement is very excited about Ted Cruz from Texas, who became the first Republican to announce his candidacy officially for president of the United States this week. I think this is someone who perhaps needed to announce first, because I don't think he necessarily has the support of a wide enough group of Americans or the vivid cartoonishness that often catapults fringe Americans to the upper echelons of power. He's hard to characterize. He's an extreme Christian conservative. He is of Cuban descent. He is a Texan. He is a lot of different things. We're used to having one defining trait in our politicians. We're used to having a Sarah Palin or a George W. Bush or even a Barack Obama, who it can be very well characterized as a certain type of character by those who support or demonize the person. And Ted Cruz is kind of all over the place. As a comedy writer, I would have written someone different.
Yes.
isn't he Canadian?
Well, he's born in Canada. And here's what I think. I think it might be a ploy by the Canadian government. Secretly get a Canadian into the White House and then have him hand the whole of the United States back to the Queen.
I think that's...
It's a plan 250 years in the making.
That is the least sinister plot involving Ted Cruz I can think of.
It's a great name, Ted Cruz. Do you not think it sounds like a P&O trip where all the staff are stuffed bears? It's just a...
He's a global warming denier, isn't
yes.
he? Which,
yes.
I mean, coming from Texas, I can understand, you know, if it goes up from 47 degrees Celsius to 48, you're not going to really notice, are you?
Especially because it would be in Celsius, no one would even know what it meant.
The only thing I know about him is he spoke for 21 hours, didn't he?
He did the great filibuster.
And as a children's book author, I do respect that he read the classic Green Eggs and Ham during that filibuster.
Did he?
Which I do respect, yeah. So
he
we
did.
Know at least he's read something.
It is a good book.
But he didn't even understand the moral of Green Eggs and Ham, because he kept saying, I do not like it, I do not like it. And the moral of it is, if you try it, you might like it.
Yes. His metaphor for Obamacare seemed to reveal that he had not absorbed the relatively simple lesson of Green Eggs and Ham.
The other thing is, and talk about relatively simple things, in another speech he stated that the words growth and opportunity should be tattooed on the hands of every Republican politician. And you think, how many fingers do these people have?
Also, a mandatory tattoo sounds a little counter to the Tea Party philosophy of minimal government intervention.
Yeah. But am I right, BJ? Because he was born in Canada to a Cuban father and an American mother, and yet, in the eyes of the Tea Party, he's more American than Obama, who was born in America.
Or so they say, so they claim. The Tea Party is a very philosophically complicated mixture of irreconcilable beliefs, masquerading as one of utter simplicity. It really is so filled with bloated contradictions that even I, who have a lot of sympathy and belief for simple American constitutional principles, find it very hard to make sense. So in fact, I suppose a Cuban, American, Canadian, cowboy, religious, church and state separator, in some ways, maybe that's the quintessential Tea Party candidate. Because I don't understand.
A lot of them are creationists, aren't they?
Sure.
And they don't believe that climate change is caused by fossil fuels because they don't believe in fossils.
I get hung up on the little stuff. It said he renounced his Canadian citizenship in 2014. I want to know how you do that. What, do you publicly slaughter a beaver? What is the thing? What's the...
You bump into someone and you don't say sorry. And it's officially renounced.
Republican Senator Ted Cruz has announced his bid for the US presidency, making him the first nominee for the 2016 election, an entire year ahead of the first presidential primaries. Senator Cruz made the announcement at Liberty University, where students were required to attend his political speech or face punishment, thus making them the only university in the world not clear about the meaning of the word liberty. Cruz has described himself as Italian, Irish and Cuban, meaning that he can't get through 10 minutes of Top Gear without being offended at some point. Again, really, I can't get enough. 2 points to BJ. Fred, if pressed on it, which streets are bad for your health?
There was a survey this week deciding which of our towns and cities are the least healthy and the most healthy. I'm delighted to say that a town where I grew up, Perth, was quite high on the list. But the worst is Preston. Now, we will have listeners in Preston, and I can guarantee that they've never heard this kind of conversation, which is, do you know the name of that shop? You know, along by the pound shop, just beside the tanning salon, across from the e-cigarette shop, you know, underneath the bloke who can unlock any phone shop, opposite the cash converters, round from the bookies, adjacent to the kebab shop. Yeah, that's it, the Louis Vuitton luggage shop. Nip in there and ask if their bags are 5 pence for a laugh, would you? And when I say e-cigarettes, I mean, that's they don't sell e-cigarettes, they sell actual tobacco. It's e-cigarettes. Just up from blimey, booze.
So it's things that have a negative impact on health, is that right?
Yeah, tanning salons, bookie shops.
Pawnbrokers.
Mm-hmm. Places where they broker porn.
Pawnbrokers, where you can take your
money.
Valuables.
I'm thinking you go in and you broker how many topless women you get to have in a...
No, that's the tanning shop.
Ah. I don't know why kebab shops are called fast food. I mean, that lump of meat is cooking at medium temperatures for hours. Very odd thing. Did anybody do the survey about where you should live in the UK? Did anybody do this?
I did.
Did you?
Yes.
How did yours work out?
I should live in the Ribble Valley in the northwest.
Oh, that's where my in-laws live. It's very quiet.
Apparently I should live there because it said residents of this district generally reported average levels of neuroticism. And they looked at me and thought, this is an averagely neurotic man.
I kept filling in things saying, you know, I was outgoing and I was extrovert and I liked a busy life and I did all this thing. Shetland Islands I got.
Did you read that Scottish people were the most emotionally stable?
Is that right?
Yeah, well, when I read that, I burst into tears. I also did the survey, Sandy, and apparently I came low in agreeableness. I thought, no, I'm not having that. But I should go and live in South Cambridgeshire.
Oh.
I phoned Aileen. She was not up for it, so I had to do the survey again. So I lied about a few answers. I actually told them I lived in the Highlands, right, which Glasgow isn't. And it then said I should move to Lewis. And I thought, oh, blimey, the Outer Hebrides, because that's where my ancestors are from. But it's actually Lewis with an E, which is near Brighton, so...
If Scottish people are the most emotionally stable, that could just mean always angry, couldn't it?
Shetland. I just don't think I'd want to live there. I find all those normal-sized horses very off-putting. Did you do it by any chance, BJ? Did you do this?
I did, and I also got Lewis, and I'm learning from this conversation what it even is.
Oh, did you get Lewis in
I did,
Sussex?
Yeah. We can hang out, I guess. Yeah.
They earn over £30,000 a year down there, and they have a 94% satisfaction rate.
Oh, but
doesn't say for what.
The survey said I was 66% likely to be happy where I'm living now. That has made me just so miserable. Did you work out where did you end up?
Well, I got the place I was born, which was Oxford.
Did you? Wow.
I did.
Oh, how strange.
Which is a bit spooky,
Do you want to go back and live in
no,
Oxford?
No, not really. No. Although I quite like Lewis.
That's only because BJ's there, isn't it? A question in the survey, if you haven't done it, about asking, did you consider yourself lazy?
Mm.
And I timed out. Couldn't decide.
A league table of the unhealthiest high streets has placed Preston at the top. The Royal Society for Public Health assessed 70 high streets in the UK according to the types of businesses found there, with bookmakers, loan shops and fast food outlets being deemed to have a negative impact. Preston has the largest number of bookmakers, which disappointed local residents as they had £100 on Grimsby winning at 10-12. Coventry came third in the unhealthiest town list, although it was difficult to collect the results as all the people surveyed were eating cake at the time. Meanwhile, the three healthiest places were Shrewsbury, Ayr and Salisbury. So good news for place names that don't sound how they're spelled. 2 points to Fred. At the end of the round, the scores are BJ and Fred have got 8 points, but Jeremy and Hugo are still in the lead with 9. We start round three with a cutting from a Norwegian cruise liner website.
During group babysitting hours, children will be supervised and entertained with a variety of activities. Parents with participating children who are not potty trained will be given a beeper, and when the child needs to be changed, they will be alerted to return to the poop deck.
And our thanks to Sean Simmons for sending us that. Jeremy, why could you see men in Portsmouth this week?
Because the USS Theodore Roosevelt docked in Portsmouth, and the guys had, 3 days, I think, to explore. And they weren't allowed to stay out past 11:30, but it was exciting for the ones who were under 21, because in America you can't get served in bars if you're under 21, so this was like they could go into bars and people would serve them. But I did feel quite sorry for them, because it... I mean, no disrespect. Most of my ancestors come from Portsmouth. I spent a lot of my childhood there, but it's Portsmouth. I mean, come on. It's not London. And, I mean, you know, they didn't sort of all, like, put on their best white sailor suits and jump off the ship going, Portsmouth, Portsmouth, it's a wonderful town. The Asda's up and the Morrison's down. I mean, it... It must have been a miserable... I mean, the naval history bit's great, because you've got all
the...
Oh, it's
fun. The historic dockyards are
amazing. Yeah, I mean, that bit. But, as a, you know, the nightlife...
I love Portsmouth. I think it's a fantastic place. But what I did love was that apparently the boat was simply too big to fit at the dockyards, and you don't think they should have checked that before they came. I just...
They're Americans. Blow a hole.
The thing I used to love, they didn't tell them anymore, but Portsmouth was a place where people, actors always told stories about landladies. There was always a story about a landlady, and one of my absolute favourites was the lad said, oh, that Frankie Howard's staying here, it was nice, a bit lonely. Although, as luck would have it, the very second day he was here, he bumped into his cousin from the Argentine Navy who came to stay.
Do you know, sorry, Sandy, the British Navy... challenged some of the sailors from the USS Theodore Roosevelt to a game of football.
All right.
And thrashed them soundly. And I was thinking about how the Americans might have practiced. BJ, you might know this, but the deck of the ship is the size of a soccer pitch. So they were able to practice, but it was exactly the same size. So every time they got a throw in, somebody went overboard. That's why the practicing didn't go quite so well.
Sure, yeah.
Wow. See, if a football match between Americans and their British counterparts, given that the Americans have got a giant 100,000-ton warship aimed at our country, I would let them win the match. My favourite thing about this whole story was the way the Daily Mail described the warship as a floating city. And it's like somebody who's just kind of getting over the whole concept of a ship. It's like a massive car on the water. The American warship USS Theodore Roosevelt arrived in the Solent this week on the first leg of its world tour. Portsmouth City Council predicted that the arrival of the sailors will boost the economy of the town by £1.5 million, with half of that coming from the hundreds of paternity tests that will be required in 9 months' time. Defence Secretary Michael Fallon stated that the arrival of the warship showed that UK-US relations were as close as ever, because it's totally normal to show how much you like someone by parking a 100,000-ton armoured boat in their water. The Mirror stated that the sailors would enjoy a traditional British holiday, sitting inside a large metal container waiting for the rain to stop. 2 points to Jeremy. BJ, who's cleaned up on writers and made them unappy?
This is a new app that you can install on, I suppose, your iPhone or whatever your reading device is that will clean up the language. I think it's called the Clean Reader, and the Clean Reader will sanitize any book that you're reading and make it less fun. to me, this is somewhere between annoying and offensive. As a writer, I think the book should be the place where you go when you're looking for mischief and trouble. What's safer than opening a book when you feel like, let's say, you're a very even-keeled Scotsman and you actually want to be aggravated or express some intense emotion or find some offense? A book should be where you go, so you don't go out in the real world and find it there. But I suppose for some people, they want 50 shades of light gray, and this is the app for them.
What's extraordinary, the app can't tell the difference between vagina, anus, buttocks and clitoris. it replaces them all with the word bottom. Which is really scraping the clitoris of the barrel, but... And it changes the word God to the word goodness. It's going to make the Bible look like it was written by one of the famous five.
It is the culture of trying to overprotect people, which I first saw in action when I went to Santa Barbara and I was on a ghost train. And as we got in, this voice said, "Please do not scream out of courtesy to your fellow travellers."
I like the swear words they put in place of actual swear words. It's things like geez, rootnest and tootnest. Don't your books being narrated by Yosemite Sam. Jared and Kirsten Morn from Twin Falls in Idaho have released an app called Clean Reader, which allows people to read e-books with the rude words taken out. The app works by scanning through the book, looking for all the dirty words, much like you do the first time you get a French dictionary at school. The couple behind the app defended it, saying the reader has the choice to turn off the censoring feature and read the book in its original form with just a light soundtrack of tutting running in the background. A word of warning, the app only censors words, so if you read The Joy of Sex, you get all the pictures with baffling instructions. Fred, have a listen to this. In my kitchen.
Wow, it's as though you're in the room, Sandy.
I know. That was UB40. I should work on radio too. Mm. Fred, which fraudster was caught by a whisker?
Oh, I thought this was the Prime Minister getting interviewed. No, this was harking back to last month, Valentine's Day in Sunderland.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies for the accent. And there was a chap.
They can't help
on
it.
His own. Poor guy on his own, yeah. Out for a meal, and rather than pay the £7.25 or whatever it was, he'd bought a pet rat for his daughter, and he had it in his pockets, you know, which anybody would... That's where you keep rats or mice. Ooh, Willie had a mouse in his trouser pocket in the Sunday Post when I was a boy.
No one cares, Fred.
And, and so he popped a rat, and, "Oh, there's a rat!" And then demanded that he would get his money back. He probably paid £8 for that. I don't know, how much does a rat cost?
Well, it's probably about £7.25. He's probably swapped the cost of the meal for the cost of the rat. Job he didn't get her a goldfish, he'd have been rumbled much sooner, wouldn't he? Well, what was extraordinary and a bit worrying, because the restaurant owner had clearly seen enough rats. He could tell wild ones from pet ones by just looking at it. According to restaurant owner Ken Smith, the rat looked like it had just had a haircut.
The guy said, he actually said, this guy deserves the death penalty. and in the paper it said the guy had ordered a slap-up meal, and then they showed the CCTV of the restaurant where the slap-up meal, and it said he paid for his meal, took his plate and went to find a table. That isn't a slap-up meal.
I think, and I hope this joke works in Sunderland, it certainly worked in Scotland, that... it all went pear-shaped when the waitress came up and said, "Would you like a dessert?" And he said, I'll have the mousse."
I've got to go to Monmouth quite soon, which
I
I'm
like Monmouth.
No, yeah, I thought I did, but I'm slightly dreading it because last time I was there, I was in the dressing room in the interval eating me sandwiches in a desultory way, and this huge black rat ran across, and I don't do rats, I'm not very good with rats at the best of times, and this rat ran past me, and then the guy came in, he said, "Everything all right with the sandwiches?" I said, "Yeah, but I should tell you, a rat just ran past me," and he said, Oh, not again.
A man released a pet rat into a restaurant in Sunderland to avoid paying for his meal, calling out, "It's a rat, I'm not eating here." On the 14th of February, Christopher Baker went to the restaurant with the rat in his pocket for a buffet meal for one and a bottle of water, Sunderland's traditional Valentine's Day celebration. On seeing the rodent, Borneo Bistro owner Kevin Smith suspected foul play, saying the rat looked like it had just had its hair done. The restaurant scooped up the rat and put it in a box with air holes. And if anyone wants to try that recipe, a box with air holes and a scoop of rat is on page 34 of Heston Blumenthal's new cookbook. So 2 points to Fred. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
Sandy, this was sent in by Michael Baker. It's taken from a newspaper, and it says, "Question of the day. What should cost less, a gallon of gas or a gallon of milk? Yes, 43%, no, 57%.
Sandy, I pulled one out. This is sent in by Rosie Kazintas from London, and the story that it writes about, the first line of the piece, is Bruce Willis will make his Broadway debut this autumn in a stage adaptation of Stephen King's novel Misery, and the headline is Bruce Willis to bring misery to Broadway.
Mike Charles from Gloucester has sent in, Sandy, a column for Monty Don, Gardening Questions, Ask Monty. And the question says, our pansies have developed black spots on the leaves. Why? And Monty replies, this sounds like pansy black spot. Genius. Genius.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Hugo have got 11 points, but this week's winners are BJ and Fred with 12. Here's a clipping from the City AM motoring section sent in by Nick Jones.
The Volvo XC90 is one of a handful of cars that offers increased capacity. Children and smallish adults will fit into a third row of seats, and when you don't need them, they disappear into the boot floor.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Jeremy Hardy, Hugo Rifkind, BJ Novak and Fred McCauley. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Jack Bernhardt and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Max Davis and Daniel Hooper. The producer was Tamara Schillen.